The term baby mother carries a heavy weight in Black British communities. Originally from 1960s Caribbean English, it was considered the mark of the beast long before mainstream culture co-opted it as baby mama. Growing up, warnings echoed through my community. Don't become someone's baby mother. Even unsuitable bachelors proclaimed they didn't want no baby mother. By the late 1980s, young Black women raising children alone, whether abandoned or choosing independence, found themselves stripped of their individual identities and relegated to mere baby mothers. Today, this label isn't just aimed at single Black mothers. It undermines the legitimacy of Black women's motherhood in general, erasing any association with positivity and success. The stereotype affects everything from healthcare to education to social acceptance, explaining why many Black women might resist motherhood altogether. What matters isn't reclaiming the term. It can stay on the shelf. What's important is allowing Black women who happen to be mothers to share their multifaceted journeys with pride. Their version of motherhood deserves to be seen as righteous and sacred, worthy of protection like any other woman's experience, regardless of family makeup or circumstances. My relationship with motherhood was shaped by my grandfather, George Bentley, who became my primary caregiver after losing sight in one eye, while my mother worked following her split from my father. This extraordinary man taught me mathematics during bath time, calling me Booby. A Windrush immigrant, he valued education despite limited schooling in Barbados. Though not formally educated, he excelled as a homemaker, cooking, managing the house, and hosting visitors who eased homesickness. My grandmother Vern was our financial anchor, saving for both rainy days and monsoons. Like an oak tree, she had deep roots in unshared memories and unwavering strength. Though typically stoic, she showed her gentler nature with me, her first grandchild. I learned that Black women's multiple faces aren't deceptive, but protective. My grandmother's stern demeanor masked her struggle to preserve her family, having emerged from what she called a house of horrors as one of 14 children.
What's in a name? For Black parents, everything. When I suggested Brixton for my daughter, my partner Bode dismissed it as ghetto. And who decides what that is? I demanded. The world, unfortunately, he replied. Watching Roots at 8, I saw Kunta Kinte whipped until accepting his slave name Toby, teaching me that names were tools of assimilation through whiteness. My name, Candace, was racially ambiguous enough to open doors before people saw me. For my child with a Nigerian surname Abodarin, I wanted a name that wouldn't reveal their Blackness until they could prove themselves, a common calculation for parents in unsupportive spaces. When Boat suggested Esme, to be loved, it felt perfect. I insisted on a Yoruba middle name to honor his heritage. The surname debate was hardest, as I wanted both our names after growing up with my absent father's surname. The process became a delicate balance between anticipating society's perceptions and refusing to be its victim.
Black British women face 5 times higher childbirth mortality rates than white women, a reality that shadowed my pregnancy. With limited UK resources for Black mothers, I relied on ill-fitting American materials. Despite having 3 diverse midwives, prenatal care was inadequate. While most were unresponsive, one Guyanese midwife offered genuine support and predicted my eventual C-section. After birth, I reported serious symptoms, night sweats, dizziness, and a wound lump, to 3 visiting midwives who dismissed them as normal, ignoring my grandmother's hospital recommendations. By the 3rd day, I could barely walk. Upon discovering concerning discharge, I sought hospital care and was diagnosed with septic shock. After emergency surgery, my family confronted staff about their earlier dismissals. Though I publicized my story through national media, a petition for government investigation fell short at 30,000 signatures, revealing continued neglect of Black maternal health.
After hospitalization, I returned to a baby who felt like a stranger. Esme slept all day and cried all night, shattering my idealized vision of motherhood. Growing up, I'd only seen Black mothers surviving, not thriving, a reality I now lived. Feeling detached from Esme and isolated, I followed a strict routine and avoided leaving home for 5 months. When my mother suggested antidepressants, I responded with denial and rage, bitter about Esme's growing bond with her during my absence. In society's hierarchy, Black women aren't even visible. We're the unseen pillars holding everything up, expected to always serve, always be available. My crisis peaked when I threw a TV at Beau during an argument. Unable to get medical help, my mother secretly shared her antidepressants. 3 days on fluoxetine transformed me. The rage finally subsided. Though I eventually saw my GP, what I'd needed most was understanding. With Bode's non-judgmental support, I began rebuilding myself beyond motherhood through exercise and friendships. When I discovered I was pregnant with RJ in 2017, London faced a knife crime epidemic with 30,000 offenses annually. My heart still skips when my mother calls late about my 18-year-old brother, who, despite his focus and good character, isn't guaranteed safety. Those who dismiss poverty haven't experienced hiding from bailiffs or missing meals. With Black university enrollment dropping, many remain in low-paid work, forcing parents to work longer hours. Adolescent boys find community within their concrete estates during crucial years. Youth clubs disappear as gentrification advances. Brixton Market sold for $37.3 million, while Lambeth Academy's exclusion rate reached 20%. Leaving London wouldn't eliminate every threat to my Black son, but it would reduce the risks. For many, leaving remains a privilege, bound by housing, family support needs, or fears of less diverse areas. But weighing my son's funeral costs against what we'd lose by staying, I would choose life, just as I did with Esme. As a new mother, I noticed traditional media's lack of Black motherhood representation. Instagram revealed a Black woman-shaped hole in content creation, leading me to leave publishing for the autonomy white mothers enjoyed. I showcased our Black nuclear family to counter media underrepresentation. While receiving support, some Black women questioned my seeking white mummy set acceptance. I understood their concerns, but believed change required entering spaces not designed for us. My KFC table analogy explains. Black women share one KFC bucket, while white women enjoy an organic banquet. Since no one explicitly forbade switching tables, I moved to the organic one, determined to stay despite others' discomfort. In 2017, I launched Make Motherhood Diverse with fellow advocates, creating space for experiences from Black, Asian, disabled, and same-sex parents. These experiences revealed that Black motherhood in Britain means navigating systems not built for us, advocating for ourselves and our children in ways white mothers rarely face while challenging generational stereotypes. I may have a baby, I may be a mother, but I am not your baby mother.